Hello, everybody. Stu Smith with another Tactical Fitness Report, and we have a special guest today, you're a reservist, Army major, 12 years in the Army, Tom Lentz, who is also an exercise physiologist who works for the Army as well as the Air Force. I'll let him explain that journey because it's pretty popular for people to want these jobs that you have, and we'll just start there with your journey, how you got to where you are now, if you don't mind. And then we'll kind of go in and talk about some of the latest and greatest that's happening in the Army, as well as the Air Force that you have some experience in. So please share, Tom.
Okay. Well, thanks, Stu, for having me on. I definitely appreciate it. To use the old cliche, long time listener, first time caller.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. This is going to be a great one. So.
Yeah. So 12 years active duty Army. I started actually, back in 2004 and went to college. So I'm a graduate of Virginia Tech, nice. Army ROTC program. So as you may or may not know, or people may or may not know, Virginia Tech has a Corps of Cadets, much like the Texas A&M, the Citadel of Norwich. So kind of
and
a dual.
I'm sorry to interrupt. And one of the best walkout songs for the football games.
Yes. Yes,
it is. You got Metallica, and that place just rocks. Yes. So that is actually one of my bucket lists, to go see one of your football games and just experience that moment.
You should. When the entire stadium is jumping, and it's just a known thing, and then the whole Corps is there. So it's truly a transcendent experience, and I was lucky enough to have 4 years of it.
Oh, love it, love it. So I'm sorry. Continue on. I just had to share that moment with you. Yeah.
So it was a good dual kind of thing. Not only do you have the Reserve Officer Training Corps experience, but you also have that Corps of Cadet, close akin to the academy. So, daily warfare and everything like that. So instilling discipline and physical training. So did 4 years of that, graduated, commissioned as a second lieutenant, military intelligence branch detail to the armor. So that meant I spent my first 4 years as an armor lieutenant, and then I transitioned. So upon graduation, I went to the Armor Basic Officer Leader course in Fort Knox, Kentucky. Back then, graduated, went to Ranger School. So that was truly a transcendent experience.
Sure.
We talked about it. It was a gut check. And I did it mainly in truth to prove to myself that I could do it. It's one of those ones you always wonder if you can or can't. And I always say, go try. You got to give it your all. Just don't quit.
I love it.
So graduated Ranger School, and then went on to my first unit, deployed to Iraq, late 2009, did 12 months, 2009 into 2010 as a reconnaissance platoon leader in the Striker Brigade combat team. So that was a humbling experience as a young officer to get to lead soldiers in combat, small platoon, small unit, but, learned a lot, grew a lot. That's when I first started my tactical fitness journey, would you say? Was being kind of out there alone at checkpoints and having to develop programs and having to say, well, we know fitness is important, but how do you balance that operationally? So I started studying, started doing some more reading, and like a lot of people, probably started with the personal training aspect, bodybuilding, splits, body weight splits, what a lot of people like, and it's easy and a good way to get started. But I was more curious about the performance aspect. So came back, transitioned into the Military Intelligence Corps, and spent about 8 years in various assignments from Korea to Colorado to Germany, all while growing myself. And so when I got to Colorado is when I first started to look heavily into a master's program, and got my master's in sports and health sciences, and then achieved my CSCS that same year. And my first kind of dabble into performance programming, I was coaching high school lacrosse in Colorado, and I actually did weight training for them as well.
Oh, so fun. I was
the de facto strength and conditioning coach for, a high school varsity team, trained about anywhere between 20 to 30 athletes, depending on the day, sports performance. But that was a good first blush into it, and got my toes wet, dipped in, and loved it. And I then at that point, about 2015, 16, I decided this was where I wanted to go. And then I started to find out about the tactical world. So left Colorado, went to Germany. And that's when I really started to dabble in the tactical world. And I was gifted, you could say. I had a lot of good leaders, and they kind of let me grow and develop, and especially in a headquarters company for a military intelligence brigade. And that's a special set of physical training of its own.
Sure.
When you deal with people who are super motivated and want to go, it's easy. And then you have sometimes the ones that are not as motivated, and you have to drag along with you on the journey. And so learned a lot about motivation techniques, learned a lot about how to help the, you know, the basic soldier, who may be a little more reluctant to train. But I got to establish an entire program for the headquarters company and for particularly the operations shop. And then created what was called, was branded the Dagger Performance Institute. And so I started to try to teach senior non-commissioned officers, and, you know, even some junior non-commissioned officers, kind of the rundown basic dirty of exercise physiology, biomechanics, just real basic stuff, probably a lot what's akin to the TSAC-F course.
So you kind of help them be a facilitator, you know, in their own units. That's smart. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's because again, we're talking eye towards the Army Combat Fitness Test was you can't roll out of bed and just do it. And, you know, expecting a spike in injuries from when everyone goes in and starts to try to deadlift and nobody has good deadlift form, or they're too worried about putting weight on the bar first rather than mastering the movement. So trying to give them just a base level enough to create generic gen pop programs that, you know, fit into a model of long-term athletic development, and we'll slowly start to, you know, increase that strength while maintaining all the other aspects. So I got to kind of run that program for a little while. I was blessed that they let me split my time while still, you know, an active duty captain and major doing staff work with this. And that's about the time, about a year, a little over, well, I guess 18 months ago, I decided to get out and pursue tactical fitness, because that was where my passion was.
Nice.
Sports performance is good, and I like that too, but the challenge of tactical athletes, and not to mention that my wife, she's actually still active duty, so she's a tactical athlete, so that's near and dear to my heart.
Sure.
And protecting and increasing the performance. So I submitted my packet, it got approved, I transitioned into the reserves, and then about 6 or so months ago, I started a job at Pope Air Force Base with a TACP unit, helping with their human performance, what they call the HPL or Human Performance Laboratory. Really nice setup. It was me and another exercise physiologist coaching, and so that was a great laboratory. I mean, to use that word again, it was a great way to learn and grow myself as a coach. Not only through direct interaction with them, but also coaching a couple people on the side in various locations. And that was kind of a model of, I went from in Germany where it was kind of just helping soldiers get along, you know, pass the APFT and move along, but then moving to a point where it's like, now it's performance-based. Now it's people who are interested in various selections or Ranger school, airborne school, you know, tier one level units.
There you go. Nice.
Things like that. So that was a growth journey for me as well. And then as we talked, I just recently left that job, and I'm en route to Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Alaska, taking a GS job with the operational support team. Currently in San Antonio on a stopover. So,
right. Hey, man, that is awesome. I have so many questions for you. I don't even know where to start, you know, but let's start off where you were, you know, as a college student, knowing, you know, you're an ROTC student. Right. And you're constant. I know you guys at Virginia Tech are tough, because I've seen you, you know, at Buds. I've trained a couple here locally that have gone on to Buds and Ranger School and SF training. They work out all the time. Right. Mm-hmm. So what did you find with that journey in college, you know, maybe coming from a sports background into the tactical athlete world? How was that transition for you?
So good question. I played multiple sports in high school: lacrosse, football, tennis, did track for a little bit, so kind of had a smattering background. And then you transition into a world where it's kind of the combination of everything. So it's not just having to be strong or having to be fast or you know, having good hand-eye coordination. It's agility, short space, it's body weight strength, calisthenics. Going into that. So it's kind of a shock at first, but, you know, Virginia Tech tends to attract a lot of high-level, high-performing non-commissioned officers and officers to perform as the professors of military science, and specifically the Army Battalion. So, but it's also developmental. So cadets run the training And that engenders a sense of competition, to be honest, because sure. You always want to be tough. You always want to be the ones who lead the way. You never want to be that one who's dogging it. And just the general nature of the program kind of breeds that competition into you. Never to be last on a ruck, never to be last on a run, never to be the first one to stop doing push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, you know, whatever. And then you slowly learn how to implement those programs as you go through your years until you reach that MS4 year, that, you know, that senior year where you are leading it and being kind of up there in charge of things. So you learn kind of that entire broad spectrum of it. Now, a lot of it is taken out of Army manual. It's very doctrinal based. So you don't have a ton of flexibility necessarily, but you do learn valuable lessons. And then you just kind of learn that it just like sports, you know, a lot of times physical training can be a competition, and it's good to have that element sometimes, as long as it doesn't go too far.
Sure.
But it does make you kind of push yourself to be better. And I think that our cadre did a great job of engendering that into us.
Yeah. I love it. For me personally, that journey from, you know, sports athlete to the tactical athlete, I realized real quick when I went to the Naval Academy that I was lacking in muscle stamina and cardiovascular endurance. You know, I was a powerlifting football player that, you know, anything over 100 yards was long distance. You know, I could do a mile, I could do a mile and a half, but that was so long distance, yeah. That, you know, and I could put out for it, you know, so it wasn't ever that hard of a deal, but, you know, it just wasn't good. You know, it was too much effort. So I definitely realized that back then, I guess I was 18, 19 years old, is that the tactical athlete, and it wasn't even called tactical athlete back then, but, you know, the military athlete really just has to be good at everything. You know, you don't have to be great in any one thing, and you may come to the table with something really great, right? But sometimes that you have to check in the ego and bring that down a notch, because, you know, a 500, 600 pound deadlift, you know, may not be needed right now. Right. Yes. And you need to work on your 2 mile run or your 3 mile run, depending on the branch of service that you're in. So tell me this, you know, as a, Army guy, you know, whether you were in college, or at your base in Germany, where you worked on a wide spectrum of fitness levels, how was that for you? And did you find some great, maybe a great story or great reward in working on that lower end of the fitness spectrum, and actually changing someone's life? You know, because I have found for me personally is that, yeah, I can prepare a guy for spec ops, train him, give him, you know, start him out at 15 pull-ups and put him up to 25 and bring him down to a 6 minute mile and, you know, get them all ready to go to spec ops. But, you know, some of the best stories I have are the guys that lost 100 pounds, mm-hmm. and are now able to go serve their country in some capacity. I imagine you've seen both ends of the spectrum in your journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll start first in college, and it's, I mean, it's accurate. Like to say this is, you have individuals that join the program who may not be on a commissioning track to start with, because they may just be joining voluntarily and hoping that it ends in that, and seeing them come and maybe struggle at first and struggle to get push-ups, struggles to run. And then, you know, after a few months, you see them improve, and then to the point where they actually pass the physical fitness test. And now you can kind of be proud that they're going to get their commission and they're going to continue on in that journey. So being able to develop them, from some of them coming in not athletes at all, never having played high school sports or any sport, and then, you know, seeing them go from a journey of struggling for one push-up to passing to maxing, and it's, you know, as a leader, it's a fun journey to watch.
Sure.
Stressful, but, you know, it's a great dichotomy of training them and then buying in, and the ones that buy in and that you train will go forward and do great things. And you'll see the ones who don't buy in won't make it. And that's okay. You know, that's part of life and part of the process. I mean, you know, ROTC and academies to a degree aren't necessarily a selection program, but they are, because you will select in or select out. And
yeah, or you'll select different grades of, you know, of jobs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So you'll see that. So when I transitioned, and then looking at Germany when I was, you know, specifically in with that, what I like to look at like that is the broad spectrum of ages. and go from the brand new private right out of basic and their training schools at 18, 19 years old, and you've got a, you know, E7 who's pushing 35, 38, and, you know, is had a lifetime of injuries and everything coming with them. And really for me, the training journey was great there, but what the ultimate rewarding experience was seeing the training that we were doing clicking. So when I could see that senior non-commissioned officer actually design the training, because I started off doing all the program design and, you know, monthly, the mesocycles and so on. And then I slowly transitioned that over to for example, this platoon sergeant. And then to see him and the other junior NCOs, because again, leadership about empowering junior NCOs and teaching them how to do it, seeing them develop a program and then me just, you know, quality controlling it, that was the great story and journey of seeing, oh, it's clicking now. You're seeing, like, we need to train aerobically, anaerobically. We need to add strength training. You know, we're a lower body strength training focus because, you know, of the 3 rep max deadlift. Hey, we're not doing well on knee tuck, so we need to make sure we incorporate various kinds of pull-ups or hip flexor exercises to try to progress people along that way. So maybe they don't necessarily use the technical terms. Maybe they're not, you know, spouting a lot of exercise physiology, but they're starting to see that, yes, we need to train within these time parameters, within these weights, within these efforts, and spread that out. And, you know, that's how we'll make our tactical athletes better. And then just see that small journey as a platoon of about 15 or 20 get better incrementally and over time. And then also, you know, you can never eliminate injury. It, you know, it's inherent to all of this, but when you can reduce the risk of it, and then I like to say that, you know, we had no soft tissue injuries that entire about 18 months we were training. And even when I turned it over to them, we really didn't see any soft tissue injuries that I could directly correlate to training, which again, the best ability is availability. And yeah. So to have that was a neat part of that journey.
Yeah, that's huge, you know, because when you have those differing levels, it really is about the progression. And if you can teach people to kind of be patient and understand that it is a process, you know, even for the 19-year-old, I mean, there may be some weaknesses that the young 19-year-old comes in with, and a kid's probably still growing, you know, it may have be susceptible to more shin splints, but, you know, the older guy, you know, has just been rucking for most of his career or babysitting for most of his career, you know, so it just kind of depends on each person. So that's fascinating. Tell me this, you know, I have a periodization model that I've been using for 20 years. It's more of a seasonal approach, you know, so it's kind of a spring, summer calisthenics, cardio mix, you know, with some strength in there, you know, more as a maintenance phase. And then I have a fall, winter cycle where it's more strength based and with some endurance thrown in there, mainly non-impact, just kind of give your body a break. You mentioned mesocycles earlier. And I have a way to train. I don't claim to have the way to train at all. I'm interested in how you set up a, you know, periodization cycle, even whether for yourself or for someone who is trying for a selection program.
Yeah. So, like you said, we all have, all the coaches have a way to train. There is no the, which is to me another great aspect of the tactical athlete is that it's solving a problem, right?
Sure.
There's one answer, but there's multiple ways to get to it. And as long as you're safe and progressing, there is necessarily not a bad way. And when I do it, I look at and say, okay, I have multiple different energy systems to develop you in. I have multiple different aspects to develop you in. And so perhaps one kind of almost an undulating model where one is getting priority, where maybe, like you say, in the winter months when it's colder, we're doing two or three, you know, strength days a week. And then we reduce our aerobic training down to 1 or 2 days. And then maybe just some anaerobic body weight style stuff a day. And then as the weather progresses, as it gets nicer, maybe I progress you to an even focus. So maybe 2 strength days a week, 2 aerobic days, and then 2, you know, anaerobic days, and then kind of just ebb and flow with that.
Sure.
A lot of it is dependent on, unfortunately, on testing for the average soldier. You know, you need to get them ready biannual or twice a year to take a test. So we may ramp up the aerobic because the run is where most people have, especially in the Army, I can speak on the Army side, sure, where we see most of the failures. So maybe that month or so leading up to it is a heavy aerobic. And then on the back side of that, we downregulate, we pull back that running and increase your strength training during that time. So that way we're not beating you up too bad.
Yep.
And then it's different, as you mentioned, talking about selection style athletes, and that's a whole other program. Because there are specific measures that you have to come in with. And the biggest one is load carriage, in my opinion. Most, sure, of those selection style ones have a lot of rucking or things like that. So there's a level of hypertrophy that is necessary across your upper back, across your lower body to support that weight. And then there's the increased ability to not only ruck with speed, but ruck with weight. And then, maybe a little less. I mean, you always want to do aerobic training and keep it fresh, but you want to increase that strength as well. And so I had been doing some selection stuff for some Ranger desired candidates, and it was about a 6 month, ideally 6 month program with
nice
heavy loaded up front anaerobic hypertrophy style training. Then a month or so of strength training, and then a dedicated month of conditioning that allowed for, strength training to continue. You wouldn't lose or not gain anything, but it kind of focus on that. And to be honest, you can produce a general population program and it'll be good for most people. But as a coach, you work individually a lot because one person may be country strong or farm strong, but may need more running. Whereas this other individual comes in, maybe a little bit smaller, weaker frame, but can run all day. Maybe they need to add some weight and go from there. So that's been a challenge to kind of look at and say, I akin this to, when I train the lacrosse athletes, like a defenseman doesn't train the same way as a midfielder, same way as an attackman. And you have to kind of periodize and change up what they do. And then even two defensemen, and to get to one of the points you made earlier, talking about the broad spectrum, squad-based PT is the foundational unit of the Army, and that's good. We all need to train as a squad, be as a squad, but that squad does not have a uniform level of ability.
True.
It was individualized. So yeah, while both may be doing a squat, one may be squatting 290 and one may be squatting 135, but that may be both of their 90%. And that's okay. That's how it works in that unit. Not everyone is going to be that way. Same thing with a run. Some people are going to be able to keep a sub 630, sub six, or some people may struggle to keep a 730, but if we're running 3 miles or whatever mile repeats, it's going to be necessary for them to look at that individualization.
That's a great point. Let's talk a little bit about Army workouts, Army PT, group style PT, because I experienced my Army workouts back in 92 when I went to airborne training in Fort Benning, Georgia. And in August, it was so hot and sawdust everywhere. Yes. So anyway, it was not unlike Navy SEAL PT. You'd have some instructor up there telling you what to do, and you do jumping jacks and push-ups and pull-ups and squats and all those things, all those calisthenic based exercises as a group. That's how I understood military PT for decades. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how it was. How is it now, and what do you see for the future? How is that changing?
So I mean, luckily, I think there's a lot of smart minds that are getting in, and I think there's starting to be a lot of buy-in at the senior levels when it comes to this. And when I came in, it was kind of the push-up, sit-up, two-mile run. It was Mondays were run days. Tuesday was muscular skeletal endurance. And then Wednesday, whatever. And then so there's no strength training. There was no in fact, a lot of bases had policies where you weren't allowed in the gym during PT hours, and if you were caught, it was not good. But it is hard because, like we talked about, even within that squad, that platoon, that section, there is inter-individual variability. And not everyone can run and keep, a formation run. Not everybody can keep a 9-minute pace or whatever the pace may be for numerous factors, stride rate, stride length, just their gait, their normal running style, and some people just can't. Some people, like myself, for example, my pace varies wildly during my run. And it may even out to a 630, 640, but it can go up and down from there. And when you're running in formation, that can be hard to keep if you're keeping a set pace, for example.
Good point.
So kind of looking at that and saying we all need to be at the same level, we don't necessarily need to. We need to be kind of doing the same workout, same training. So what you see a lot, what we're seeing, I believe, a lot more now is kind of what we talked about, where it's like we're doing the same training session, but for example, you know, squatting, deadlifting, you know, sprinting, it's going to be different speeds and different weights, and that's okay. You know, that you're all going to even each other out, but some may be stronger, some may be faster, but we're still training as a group. We're not, you know, it's not often doing your own thing by yourself. It's still functional, you know, training to make ourselves better. Nice. But knowing that you may have one little group over here that's, you know, hex bar deadlifting 300 plus, and then you have one group that's between 200 and 250, and you have another group that's on the lower end, maybe doing some movement mechanics and some work like that. But that we're not scared to touch weights anymore. It's not a bad thing. It's not taboo to touch those and to make sure those are involved. And there's a lot of companies that have, you know, made boxes and made things that can be out there in use, because can't fit everybody into a gym between, you know, the hours of 6:30 and 8, and, you know, getting outside and training. And so going forward, looking at some of the stuff and some other coaches I've talked to who are, you know, embedded into active duty Army units, it is about getting more involved and more hands-on with variety of training, and saying resources are limited, but how do we spread the wealth and say, making sure everybody is getting strength training, making sure everybody is getting appropriate aerobic training. Cause it's not just a blanket anymore of everyone needs to run, you know, X speed. It's everyone's going to be different, and their journey of progression is going to be slightly different. But going to more of not necessarily individual style, but a lot more focus being put onto the individual, because kind of a blanket spread of it is you're raising the risk of injury by kind of saying everybody must be this. Here's a blanket answer to every question.
Sure. Yeah. So tell me this. You know, since the 80s, they've been doing the push up, sit up, 2 mile run in the Army, and in the Navy it was push ups, sit ups. That changed to crunches, 1.5 miles. Since then, the only changes the regular Navy has made is they turn crunches into plank pose. Mm-hmm. But the Army went completely 180 degrees out and turned this classic PT test. And it's a classic PT test. I call it more of a health and wellness test. Yes. Than an actual soldier performance evaluation. You know, just with the physical activities of the job doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a great soldier because you can crush the CFT. Just means that, you know, you have the physical abilities to actually do the job. Whereas the old test was you have the physical ability and wellness to be healthy and do your job. Maybe, you know, at best, that's what it did. You know, the older version one. Where have you found the line within the Army? People like it, people don't like it. You know, I personally love it compared to what it used to be. Just curious what your opinion and what you've seen the opinions of the fellow Army folks.
Yeah, so great, you know, great question, because we're all progressing this way. And obviously, just up front, obviously the opinions I share are those of my own.
Sure.
But coming from it as an exercise physiologist and having a background, you know, I'd like to think they're a little bit informed. But so there's a lot of reaction at first of, oh my God, like this is a lot. From a logistics perspective, getting all the equipment, from a logistics perspective, setting it up, executing, mm-hmm. from an administrative perspective. And I'll share up front, my first thought when I talk to commanders or people that kind of bucket the test is, well, if it's so important that we're kicking soldiers out of the military for failing a test, why would you not want to invest the time and effort into an actual better test? Like, yes, you cannot execute this in 30 minutes. No, you cannot roll out of bed and do it. But if human performance and physical training is so important, then yes, you're going to need to dedicate half a day to it. And that's okay. Like, it will be a complete paradigm shift in how we conduct training.
Sure.
But I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that we have gone for the cheap, easy answer for a while, and there are probably a number of soldiers who have been removed from the military and the Army specifically who could have continued service with this test who were probably good soldiers. And, you know, the vice versa, the opposite of that is likely true as well, and won't dive into that.
Yeah.
But I think that it's a better measure. And I think that as an exercise physiologist, as a strength coach, and, you know, as a human performance, it is far better to say, can you perform in all of these modes? I think there's a little bit of learning. I know that it has gone through test phases and standards have adjusted left and right. And they've kind of, you know, looked at things and said, you know, this is working, this isn't working, which I think is good. I think coming out with a blanket thing and just saying everybody will do this would have been rough at first.
Sure.
But to say that, you know, you should never train like you have shared many times, don't train for the test. Like the test, I say the test is your ticket to the amusement park. That gets you onto the rides. Like, we're going to train you to be inside the park and doing all the fun stuff. And if we do that, it'll take care of the test. And I think that the Army Combat Fitness Test, from my personal perspective and my personal opinion, is going to do a far better job of informing commanders of the performance abilities of their soldiers. Like you said, the Army Physical Fitness Test was like, okay, they're healthy enough. And as we discussed earlier, who can run 2 miles the fastest was always the way I looked at it. This one is going to say, no, you can't. You have to be able to perform all of these functions. And everyone says, and looking at it and says, it's a gut check. It is an absolute, by the time you get to the 2 mile run, you're spent. You have used almost every energy system. And if you aren't preparing properly, you're going to be a little bit hurting at the end. And I think the other aspect of this that I like about it is it brings into forefront nutrition, performance, preparation, recovery, and all these other great aspects. Because again, with the Army Physical Fitness Test, you could kind of roll out of bed, drink half a Gatorade, and go out there and do it.
Sure.
And so you didn't really have to prepare. This was a test that you're going to actually have to put dedicated time, not only into the physical preparation, but I believe the mental, and then again, having that recovery and really the entire aspect of human performance.
Absolutely. You know, for a combat fitness test, as they call it, it really holds a majority of the answers you need, you know, if you think about it, because the old one was more muscle stamina and endurance, cardiovascular endurance. You know, you need those, and they're still tested in this test, but you also need strength and power, speed and agility, flexibility, mobility, grip. You know, I call those the elements of fitness, that the tactical athlete has to be good at all of them. And when you're not getting tested at all of them, the chances of you practicing them on your own is fairly limited to the folks who like to work out, you know, in addition to the group PT that they do. Mm-hmm. So I think at least this one, you know, even if you just train for the test, and you know, we like to say not to do that, but there will be people who just train for the test. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you're going to have to, you'll at least be able to create a better all round body for yourself. You know, you'll learn some strategies to training and testing. You'll learn some fueling strategies, especially for, you know, being able to have a little bit more fuel on the back end of that thing and to be able to push your 2 mile run, because probably if you don't drink carbs during this test, you're going to bonk on the back end for sure. Especially if you try to push your pace at all. Mm-hmm. So I love it. I think it's a fascinating thing. I've been writing about tactical fitness for a while now, mm-hmm. and trying to teach all the different things you need. And it seems to me that the Army has just encapsulated everything you need to be a tactical athlete in this test.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So let's do this. You mentioned that you work with TACP as well. Have you noticed similarities in that job requirement as well as, you know, some of the other folks that you've been working with in the Army?
So yes, I mean, there is, I mean, tactical athleticism, I think, you know, transcends boundaries, whether unit, whether branch of service, or so on and so forth. But as you know, there are different levels of tactical athlete, and, you know, you have your gen pop, you know, kind of average everyday soldier, airman, marine, sailor, who need, you know, to be healthy, need to be able to perform their job and move. And then you start to bleed over into that, you know, spec warfare, you know, soft kind of item, you have a more of a focus on overall increasing performance. And so that's kind of the biggest difference that I saw, was that I'm taking, yes, I do have a handful that maybe need some help. Maybe some of the support guys and gals are struggling with some of the fitness test requirements, or maybe just, you know, general things, and all the way to the ones who are looking at, selection, preparation, going to tier one units or other units, other schools that maybe require a higher level of performance, or just in general, maybe they are already, doing really well and just want to continue to increase the weight they push, the weight they pull, and get faster at all those other items. They're already achieving at a high level, and now you're just putting stuff on top of that cake while managing that risk of injury while you're doing that first and foremost. But it was good to see that. It was kind of good to have that spectrum and saying that, yes, I have a handful over here that I'm kind of, really working mobility, flexibility. I'm really working on squat form. I'm really working on all these items, all the way through to the ones that you could do more Olympic lifting with. You could do some other things, sexier things like French contrast. You could do really kind of high level plyometrics and other items as they prepare for, whether it's selection or just general items. And you could challenge them with a lot heavier conditioning protocols than maybe you could with kind of that general airman, for in this case, for example.
Yeah, that's pretty good. How about let's say the training or job requirements, of the TACP compared to like the student going to ranger training or the person who's in a ranger battalion even? How would you say, those job requirements are similar or different?
So like you were talking about with like the Army Combat Fitness Test, there is that kind of underlying spectrum. And while, the Air Force's general physical fitness test is, again, the push-ups, the crunches, the mile and a half run, and the, body weight, measurement, the waist measurement. So they don't necessarily have that requirement yet, but there still is a general requirement for strength, whether it's picking up ammunition cans, whether it's carrying heavy boxes, left and right, even if you're just a logistics or a support individual. And then you have kind of some of the other aspects, Air Force Special Warfare aspects of the operator fitness test that is kind of out there. They're looking at some new tests and stuff, but it's very similar to combat fitness tests with deadlifts and pull-ups and various things like that. So that kind of transcends. And while one may need a larger degree of it, it is equal across the board, because as if you can increase strength and increase rate of force development, increase, the body's ability to handle forces, then you reduce that risk of injury regardless. So whether you're, moving with 50, 60 pounds on your back across uneven terrain, calling in, for close air support, or if you're, moving boxes and carrying ammunition and running ranges with kit on, that higher degree of mitigation of injury risk is universal across, sure, regardless of what you do. And that's kind of the benefits you see with being able to do that with both sides.
Yeah. It looked really similar to me. And from my experience of guys that have gone on to do those jobs and listening to their stories when they come back, that the job is, very similar. Load bearing, lots of miles, strength required. But once again, the requirement to be an all-round athlete or tactical athlete is greater, in that group for sure.
Well, and as well, the one thing that, especially with talking about ranger prep, is the cognitive aspect of it. And that's to be able to throw high levels of stress at them and then still be able to make decisions. And for the TACP, that's, close air support, that's, airspace, management. Yeah. So on and so forth. And so a great aspect that we able to do is say, put you through a training routine and then throw a cognitive task at you, whether it's accounting board. We would do land navigation, for example, with between heavy strength sets. Here's a land nav test, because when you're stressed, all the hormones are going and your mind starts to close down to those executive functions, we're going to try to reintroduce those and say, no, you don't just get to rest for 2 to 3 minutes. You're going to do a Where's Waldo, you're going to do a maze or something that requires motor skills and also the ability to decipher and process information.
Such a great idea. I've been doing that for years, and whether I do it with flashcards, and it's funny, I mean, it's really funny because you can really mess someone up, you know, after they've been just burnt out on whether it's a sprint set or a heavy lift set, they're resting, and you throw them a flashcard of 7 times 9, and they're looking at it like that part of their brain is just not turned on.
Exactly.
And to be able to engage that thinking part of the brain and that creative part of the brain while you are physically tired takes practice. And that's a really smart point, you know, to do with these guys, because it just helps them, you know. One, there is a benefit to go to your happy place and not have to think. There will be a time when you just need to go into that zone and just not think about anything. However, once you get through the selection process and, you know, some of the more advanced training and you're doing your job, that thinking part of the brain has to remain on all the time. And creative part of your brain too. I mean, because you got to get creative sometimes when there's a solution that needs to be discovered. What other ideas have you done? That's great. Land nav questions. I do history, you okay. know, like second president of the United States, you mm-hmm. know, you got to think for a second, you know, like, yeah. you know, and, you know, whatever. History is a really good one. You know, just some basic stuff that, you know, that you would find on the show, you know, I'm, you know, smart enough to be a fifth grader or something like right. that, you know, just so, classic questions like that. What other things have you used in that?
So we've done ones where it's like, name something for every letter in your first name. So a noun, for example, Tom, tank, you know, ocean, machine. So I'm failing even now, not even under stress. We do color cards. So where the card is a color, the word on the color word on it is a certain, and then that itself is a different color. And so you could say, what's the color of the card? What's the color written on the card? What's the color of the font on the card? To try to help them force through that. We did ones where there's two words on a card that have a similar association. So for example, I think it was like river and money, which is bank. So having to find a word that both of them relate to.
Damn, that's great.
Right. And those ones are fun because sometimes they look at them like, and it takes them a while. There's some ones that are pretty easy and there's ones that are harder, but you can kind of play with that. What is the sum of your birth date? What is the sum of your spouse's birth date? What is the sum of your child's birth date? And you could do just from whole numbers all the way down to adding each individual digit. You could say the alphabet forward or backwards. Days of the week in reverse alphabetical order. And those are generally shorter ones, but you can modify. So if you're doing more of an anaerobic or aerobic day, you can kind of periodize those to shorten that rest period. And then if you're doing more of a strength training, like the land nav test or a 9-line medevac is a great one. We have
classic
10 or 11 scenarios that they have to read it, then they have to fill it out. And the goal would eventually be to putting a radio into operation, doing it and actually calling up, you know, for example, a 9-line medevac, and specifically for the TAC piece, possibly moving that into even a close air support request or something like that to put them in the kind of a stressful situation. But, you know, those are kind of building. So just like we periodize, just like, you know, you go from 85 to 90 to 95%, maybe start with some of the easier, sure. you know, items and then slowly add them on into building into complex executive functions.
I love that. That is so good. And you can mix that with any type of workout too. So that's actually genius. I love that.
A good way to also, especially for the ones that don't follow rest periods too well, to say put 3 minutes on a strength day, put 3 minutes on the clock. You have the counting board where the numbers are randomized 1 through 350, and you have to count 1 to 100 or 1 to 50. And you have to find each one of them, and that forces them to rest, and because they're competitive and they'll try to get through as fast as possible. But you develop protocols that, you know, that roughly counting 1 to 50 is going to take 3 minutes or so. So that way you can help modulate their rest periods and not allow them to just rush back under the bar when you know, hey, I need that rest for this adaptation. Because a lot of them don't like to rest, and especially, you know, with tactical athletes, time is money, and this time is the one thing you can't make more of. So we have to use much as we can. So if I can strength train you and provide cognitive stimulation, you know, we're getting twice the benefit. I'm not wasting your time. I'm still able to get you stronger and make more of a purpose to what we do.
I love it. That is great. So tell me this, where do you see the future of Army PT? We talked a little bit about the past. We talked about the present. What's happening with the future of Army PT world?
So just kind of knowing, you know, just what I know, again, speaking from my personal experience, I know that there is an initiative out there. There are several active duty units that have strength coaches or registered dietitians or
nice.
Athletic, you know, training, athletic trainers embedded within them. It's a small population now. But I think the benefits of it is absurd. I mean, just having strength coaches that are available, I think has seen drastic improvement in ACFT scores, drastic improvement in musculoskeletal injury reduction. And so ideally it would be good if the Army moves, in my opinion, to some more of a stable model of this, because they're force multipliers, and the Army training model, it's based off of necessity. We have master fitness trainers. We have NCOs, non-commissioned officers, that conduct the training. But usually it's the one with the biggest arms or the biggest bench press, and they just turn to them and say, hey, run training today. May not understand why they have a big bench press, may not understand all the aspects of human performance.
How to teach a big bench press.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To whatever point want to do that. But we're transitioning to saying, hey, we need to develop a better model. And the TSAC-F, you know, certification with the NSCA was a start for that. And sure, hopefully that continues to promulgate. But it's really kind of saying, how do we embed and get more knowledge and say, look, we aren't subject matter experts on human performance. You can't produce that in a 3-week course. Like, you can touch your toes in it, but a little bit of knowledge can be dangerous if not used properly. But having some level of subject matter expertise, whether even if it's just at a, you know, quality assurance, quality control level, is vital to make sure programming is making sense, making sure it's progressive, making sure you have appropriate overload, and that you aren't just going straight into crazy high intensity, you know, training. Because and like we talked about a little bit earlier, that soldier that's been at the unit for 3 or 4 years and trained every day has completely different training requirements than that soldier coming right out of basic and advanced individual training. The training age, and even what's come, you know, the soldiers that are coming in now are not necessarily doing as many sports at the younger ages, I think, is what we're seeing. That athlete's training age may only be 6 months, vice the one who's been doing it for 4 years or 10 years. And you have to treat them differently. You cannot, for long-term athletic development, you cannot treat them the same. And I think that's what the Army has learning. I think that's what, you know, this interaction with human performance teams and starting in, you know, in the special forces community, which is where it was, you know, desperately needed for the past 15, 20 years, is now leaking out into the main force, to the generic soldier, which also has a need for it. And I think that's where it's going to go, but it's going to be strength training. There's going to be a greater understanding of what it takes for human performance, not only from, again, you can't go into the gym and train hard and do, you know, lots of stuff and then turn around and go to the DFAC and eat 3,000 calories worth of, you know, fried eggs and biscuits and gravy and all these other things. There's a whole other aspect to this, which is the nutrition, which is the recovery that is being drug along slowly. I know there's a lot of, some people are a little reluctant because they love their Monsters. They, not to trash a brand, they love their energy drinks. Yeah. And you look at them and you're like, you say it, and I love it, is you can't outwork your diet. So you got to address that. And then you can't just train and expect everything when you're 21, maybe, but you can't train and just expect that to even everything out.
And I'll tell you what, I mean, being highly caffeinated and trying to do these tests, your heart will come out of your chest.
Yes.
You know, it will throw you off on any pacing that you had maybe pre-trained and understood to this point of muscle memory or whatever, or conditioning. And it will throw you off all your pace. You know, so I tell people, don't even think about coffee, Monster drinks, or whatever caffeinated drink you want to do. Is not going to help you on a fitness test.
And it's that pre-workout culture. And then it's the, you know, not only is the test going to push you to be a little sympathetic just because of the stress, but now caffeine is going to add on to that sympathetic stimulation. So now your body is doubly producing, you know, hormones and trying to figure out what's going on. And like you said, what you're going to start doing is wasting energy. You're going to start expending energy, not towards performance of the test, but rather just simply mitigating your own self, trying to fight through that reaction to it.
Yeah, it's awful. I experienced it firsthand by accident. right? And I'm not a big caffeine drinker. We were deployed in Italy, I think. We're working with the Italians, Special Forces, and I was enjoying the culture. I said, oh, let me try one of these cappuccinos.
Yes. Right?
Tried a couple of cappuccinos, eating some biscuits before we go work out. I went to run, and I was already anaerobic before we even started running. I mean, that was awful.
The Italian cappuccino, like, that's a whole other level of caffeine. Ooh. That is concentrated. That makes our coffees, I mean, coffee Americano is just cut that with water, but it makes our coffee look pretty weak.
Oh, yeah. I know I had probably 300 milligrams of caffeine before I went on a run, and that I about died.
Yes.
You know, I was only 26.
At that age, you may be able to push through it. But
Yeah, I was. I mean, it sucked, but it was awful. Yeah, I tell you what, though, you know, it's really good to hear the evolution of, you know, military going into this new, you know, tactical fitness world, because we're starting to treat our soldiers and airmen and sailors, Marines, like athletes. And I've always said, we got to start treating ourselves like athletes, because your job requires it. Mm-hmm. I remember showing up, you know, in the early 90s at my SEAL team, and I marveled at the fact that my high school athletic program had a better facility, better training, better people there to help you with your training than our SEAL team did. Our SEAL team had a weight room that we shared with another SEAL team that was probably about the size of my basement, you know, and, you know, now it's a world-class facility.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and trainer, physical therapists and nutritionists and, you know, orthoped doctors, everything. It's incredible.
Well, and as you say, like, it's that team. So it's, you know, coming from what I did with the TACPs, it was a human performance team.
Yep.
So it was two strength coaches, a PT, and a licensed clinical social worker. And that team model is just outstanding. It's the ability to be so integrated, because it crosses that spectrum of physical training for performance to, you know, rehabilitation, you know, prehabilitation, and then the mental, you know, emotional, you know, side of it as well is taking care of that broad spectrum, because we can't exist in silos. A strength coach can do a lot of great things, but if they don't have a, you know, a horizontal link to that physical therapist, if they don't have a horizontal link to that licensed clinical social worker, you're just doing one thing. And you know, it's, you know, tactical athletes, unlike a sport athlete, is not just for one thing. Like, the sport athletes preparing for a competition, a game, a playoff game, you know, so on and so forth. They know exactly when it is. They know exactly where it is. They know they know how long it's going to be.
Yep.
And that tactical athlete doesn't. It could be the bell could go up at any minute, any moment.
Good point.
Anything from a quick sprint to a, you know, 6 mile movement over the mountains, you know, in a country, austere country. Like, so you have to be ready at all times. And that covers a broad spectrum. It's not just being physically ready. It's being mentally, emotionally ready to perform that. And I think that the ability to have that and knowing that where you came from when you went to that first SEAL team to now where a lot of units have boxes out back, they have the gym in a tricon that is with pull-up bars, and they have even just a little bit of weight, but it gives them that flexibility to get out there and do that, because you're right. We need to treat our tactical athletes like the high performers that they are, and give them that ability. Now we're saying, hey, we're going to get you where we're all doing well, you know, performing well, to now let's take it to the next level. Let's move human performance to high performance.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. That's a great progression. I tell people this, especially the young guys, you know, especially the young spec ops guys that go to their team or whatever, take full advantage of your strength coaches, your physical therapists, and all the other sort resources that you have there, nutritionists, because like I said, my time in the teams, and I only did 8 years in the Navy, by 30 years old, I was broken. Yes. I mean, everything was messed up. My hips were messed up. I had a stress fracture, ankle surgery, shoulder separation. There was something wrong with me. Some of it was traumatic injuries from just, you know, the job, but most of it was training related, because my training was flatlined at peak.
Yes.
Year after year after year. And it's easy to do in your 20s, but you'll start paying for it shortly thereafter. And it took me a few years to rebuild. And I went back to the basics and just started doing bodybuilding routines when I got out, just to rebuild. And then I was able to create my seasonal tactical fitness programming, which changed everything. You know, I'm in better shape now, pain wise, you know, at 51 than I was at 31. You know,
well, unfortunately, experience is the best teacher. Yeah. And you learn that, and luckily you're sharing what you learn for us younger coaches, we in turn are trying to put that down, but like, you know, same thing. Some guys come in and say, well, if I don't have a sweat angel on the floor after my workout, it wasn't worth it. And you said, no, like there are rebound days, there are active recovery. You talk about doing, you know, the 5 minutes on the cardio. Oh,
life changing.
Exactly. Life-changing. And sometimes it's you drag them kicking and screaming into that because they're like, no, I want to do this. And then you say, you will thank me later because, you know, you won't be sympathetic. You won't be constantly redlining. We're going to pull you down. You're still going to increase strength. And one of the good things about this model is with the strength coaches is you are also someone they talk to. So if they have problems, or once you get that buy-in and you build that relationship, there is more of a discussion of lifestyle and how they are. So you help them with that, because some of them use the gym as a way to just forget everything and just beat themselves into the ground because of any other number of stressors that they're facing. And if we can teach them and instruct them and bring them along to say, you don't have to do this, you can still perform by doing these other things. And once they see it, a lot of the lights, I love just watching the little light bulb go on when they're like, I feel good today. Like my squat is going up, you know, my bench is going up, all this stuff is going up, and I'm still feeling good when I used to just do this and I would be trashed for 2 or 3 days afterwards.
Right. Yeah. I love it. That is nice whenever you can actually not feel pain, you know. Yeah. It's you notice it when you're in pain for a lot, and then all of a sudden you realize that you're not in pain. Mm-hmm. You know, it turns on some light bulbs for sure.
Yes, yeah, so the best is with the guys who deadlift and then say they used to only have to like walk leaning over the next day and stuff, and then you work with them for a couple days and stuff, and then they start doing it and they're like, well, I can still move after I deadlift. And it's like, yes, that means you were doing it wrong before. Like,
nice.
We bring you along. Like, you should be able to deadlift and still be able to move the next day. Those should not be mutually exclusive items.
Well, you know, Tom, let's wrap this up. I do appreciate your time. I'd love to have you on again and maybe even chat a little bit about another aspect we didn't get to chat about, was the reservist.
Okay.
You know, the reservist fitness requirement and the challenges that's involved with that. Yeah, I know
I'm living that challenge right now, and I'd love to come back when I have a little bit more experience and share that as well. But yeah, definitely. Yeah.
That's awesome. I know you're in a transition and moving to a new duty station. So whenever you get situated and you want to come back, please join us again. I'm sure my guys would love to hear about it. I don't get enough Army information in here. And the Army is the big green machine. I'm telling you, there's a lot of people who join the Army every year. And, you know, I can get smarter on the Army challenges as well. So I appreciate your time.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate you having me on and allowing me to speak. And like I said, I will definitely reach back out and love to talk again.
All right. So where can people find you? You know, whether they're an Army guy or Air Force guy, or where can people find out more information about where you are?
So the best one probably is email, which is thomas.a.lins4@gmail.com.
I'll put it in the description too.
So. I do have Twitter and Instagram. So I'm at Coach Tomus on Instagram, on Twitter. And okay. I'm Coach_Tom_Lins on Instagram. My social media game, as a lot of people, is probably not that good, but if people reach out, you know, I will definitely respond as best I can and when I can.
Cool. Well, thank you one for doing that, but also just thanks for your time to share your journey and your experience as well. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Stu.
All right. Thank you. And everybody, check out the description for more information on Tom Lentz below, and we'll see you next time.